Once there is sinful behavior in a person, once there is behavior that you're trying to get rid of, how do you then go about restoring things? Or as a counselor, what advice do you give and where do you start? I think the place that you need to start, and I think it's the best place to start, is to collect and correctly interpret the data. First session, beginning of the first session, is just asking questions. There's lots that you can think about in order to solve the problem. But it's no good going to the doctor, and the doctor doesn't ask you any questions. You sit there and he looks at you and he says, I think you need your appendix out. He's first got to ask questions and say, does this hurt? It's amazing with doctors. Have you ever noticed? Whenever they say, does this hurt, the answer is yes. Why does he always press on the right spot? You heard the story of a guy goes to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, what's the problem? And he says, well, doctor, if I push here, it's sore. And doctor, if I push here, it's sore. Doctor, I can push here, and it's sore. And the doctor is trying to work out the common point. Everywhere he pushes, it's sore. The doctor says, I realize what the problem is. You've got a broken finger. You see, when you press here and it's sore, and you press over here and it's sore, immediately our thoughts are going to the location, and we're starting to say, well, it could be, I don't know, it could be kidneys, it could be the lung, it could be the heart, it could be the shoulder. And we're trying to make up the diagnosis before we even started. It's no good being a counselor and not being able to listen. You've got to listen, and you've got to assess a whole lot of things. You've got to ask questions, followed by questions, followed by questions. And when you've run out of questions, find somebody who can ask, tell you how many more questions you can ask. First thing that I came across on Wednesday night when I chatted to this young boy was demonism. Is he possessed by demons? It's not something that's common to our culture, but there were a number of things that led me to believe that this could be a possibility. And so I had to ask a whole number of questions. And because I hadn't had lots of experience with it, I came home on Thursday night after having spoken to him a second time, and I phoned Bishop Raj, and I said, you've been in Hinduism where there's a lot of demon possession, please tell me, what sort of questions do I need to ask? And he said, well, what have you discovered? And I told him, and he was able to say, okay, these are the questions you still need to ask. You still haven't got enough information to say, yes, it is a demonic activity, or no, it's not. And so he gave me a whole lot of other indicators. Carry on asking questions. There's never a point that we can get to when we counsel people that we've asked enough questions. That sounds really strange, but that's really true. Asking questions about why is it that your husband is staying away from home so often. Don't just assume that he's found another woman. Is this regular behavior? Has he shown interest in another woman? Is he flirtatious? If they say, well, no, he's actually quite embarrassed when he speaks to other women, well, then that you take that from where it comes and you carry on asking questions. And so the whole of the first session that I had with this young chap and his father was just asking questions. Didn't offer any advice at all. And having come home and spoken to Francie about it, she said, oh, have you pursued this avenue? And I went back second session and I asked more questions. It was important for me to find out exactly what was going on in this young man's mind. And because he answered the questions in certain ways, and you've got certain behaviors that would manifest themselves in demon possession, I was able to virtually wipe that off. I've got a friend who lectured in psychology, and as much as I say bad things about psychology, there's some really good things that we can learn. And I sat with him for more than an hour yesterday, asking him whether there are any psychological conditions that would give rise to the fact that he didn't remember what he was doing with a truncheon and a shifting spanner. He said, what medication is he on? Ah, here we've got a whole lot of new questions to ask. What are the side effects of those medications? What would contradict the other one. Now I've got to get permission from him to phone his psychiatrist and just ask about the medication that he's on and the medication that the GP has put him on. And do any of those conflict? Because that could give rise. I could be praying demons out of him left, right and center. And it's not really that, it's the medication that he's on. I could be checking medication and saying, take him off all medication. It's not the medication, it might be the environment in which he's living at home with a broken family and all sorts of other complex issues. So it's no good suggesting a path of action unless we understand the problem fully. We've got to correctly interpret the data. A fool finds no pleasure in his own understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. That's a nice proverb. Then that's a great question, yeah. Question is, does a person who comes to me necessarily know that I'm going to come from a Christian framework or that I've got a purpose? Is that the question? That my purpose is to lead them close to God. I make it quite clear at the beginning. I'm in the fortunate position of being a minister, so I say, okay, you've come to a church for help, so I'm happy to give you help, but you must know that the help that I give you is from the Bible. Okay, that gives me immediately a foot in. If I was approached on a sort of regular basis, just as a counselor, there are two ways to deal with it. I mean, here's an example. Somebody comes to you and asks you, does this dress make me look fat?
For you, yes.
There is no right answer to that question. Okay, no matter what you say, you're going to be in trouble. Okay, so you've got a wonderful friend, but you're shopping together in Woolworths, and she puts this dress on, and she says, does this make me look fat?
The answer is always yes. I mean, I shouldn't be
asked. Well, yeah.
I'm just going to know, it doesn't make you look fat. You're all fat.
The problem is not so much with knowing where the person's coming from. The problem is, do you tell them the truth or don't you? Or if the answer is yes, you do tell them the truth, how do you tell them the truth? That's one way. They're not going to ask you unless they feel that it might make them look fat. So the answer is always yes. So what you've been saying is absolutely correct. When you're dealing with a difficult issue, there are two ways to go about it. You can be absolutely truthful. Yes, you look like an overgrown hippopotamus. Absolutely truthful. All right? Or you can be absolutely gracious. No, I've never seen you look slimmer in your life before. You need to be proud of the way that you look in that dress. That is only grace, no truth. Okay? The first is only truth, no grace. When you read about Christ, he is full of grace and full of truth. Not 50-50. He is 100% truthful and 100% gracious. How do you get that right? It's through God.
Yeah, I think if you are God, I mean, Jesus was God.
Okay.
So that's how he got it.
So he got it right. Now, if we're going to emulate his example, it's only in his strength that we're going to do that. So it's asking God for the grace to say what you need to say in the most loving way, but not ever compromising truth. Counselor came to me. She herself was a lifeline counselor, and she asked me a question about a young guy, or relatively young, who was a manic depressive. We call them manic depressive. They're now called bipolar. He had hit really low places, and in this low place, he had gone for an assessment, and the doctor discovered that he had cancer, or suspected that he had cancer. And he had said to this woman, if I ever have cancer, I will commit suicide. I have nothing more to live for then. the story carries on in that she was then given the notes from the doctor to say that this guy did have cancer. And she says, what do I tell him? If I tell him he's got cancer, he's going to commit suicide. I'm going to feel guilty for the rest of my life. What do you do? And the same as your situation, I didn't know. I had to say, I don't know. Give me a day to think about it and to pray about it. I don't know what I would say to him. And I came across this aspect that Christ was full of grace and full of truth. So how does that work its way out practically in this woman's life? And it worked its way out practically in that I said to her, you've got the envelope sealed. You can go to him and say, they're the answers. Do you want the answers or don't you? If you don't want the answers, that's okay. I can burn this right now. Neither of us will know exactly what the doctor says in the envelope. She knew what the doctor would say, but you wouldn't know exactly what the doctors would say. So we can burn it. Neither of us will know. We'll carry on living. The chances are he's not going to say burn the envelope. He's wanting to know if he's got cancer or if he hasn't. He doesn't want to live with the suspicion. So he said, okay, we can open this. But I want you to know that cancer is curable, and not only so, but I will walk with you every single step of the way if the answer is positive. It's not a death sentence. We're going to live it through together. So whether it's positive or negative, our relationship doesn't change. You see, if she had never told him, he would never trust her again. When I come as a counselor and I say to people, I'm going to come to you, there are going to be some hard lessons to teach you. There are hard lessons that I've had to learn, and I'd prefer not to share them with anybody else. But 2 Corinthians chapter 1 says that I've got to share so that they might derive the comfort that I've received. In a situation like that, you can't keep him in the dark. If you tell him something that's not there, if you all grace, he will never trust you again when he finds out you haven't told him the truth. If you only truthful, he'll say, there's no hope, she can't even be gracious in what she's saying. You've got to be 100%, 100% as Christ was, or as close as you can get to that. Just telling people the truth doesn't help anybody when we've got the example of Christ being gracious and truthful. And that's what we've got to learn. Okay, when you're collecting the data, you're doing so through the grid of your spiritual perspective. And a question you can ask a person is, you're asking me for my opinion. Do you really want it? Because I don't think you're going to like it. Does this dress make me look fat? A question to ask is, do you want me to tell you what I think? Would you like me to tell you what you hope I'm going to say? Now, they've asked the question because they've got questions about it themselves. You've answered to say, I'm confirming those, but I'm not saying as much. Because if I answer with, would you like me to tell you what you want to hear? The answer is clearly, I don't believe what I would tell you in that case. I won't be telling you the truth of my perspective. You're coming to me as a Christian counselor. Do you want my opinion? Because my opinion counts for nothing. You might as well go to the gardener, or you can go to the president, or you can go to a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a soothsayer, whoever you want. And all you're going to do is you're just going to listen to them as equal voices. Do you want God's perspective on your life or not? There's a choice. And they say, no, I want your perspective. And you say, well, mine is flavored by the Word of God. Please accept it as such, or you're welcome to look for advice anywhere you want. Okay. As you're collecting that data, you're not making up your mind and saying, this is how I'm going to answer it. You don't speak out of ignorance. You gain perspective. I also like this other proverb. He who answers before listening, that is his folly and shame. You've got to collect the data properly. Okay, the second one. You've got to instill hope. That's what I was speaking to this woman about. it's no good taking a person's confidence and saying, I don't know that there's any chance. Never heard anything like this. I remember seeing a psychologist, a Christian counselor, speaking to somebody. And this person came with the most horrifically sordid mess of a life. And his face didn't show any surprise, any shock, any horror. And this guy went into graphic detail as to how he would mutilate cats, and he would do all sorts of things to all sorts of people and animals. And this counselor just listened to him, and his face didn't register anything but the knowledge that here is a sinner needing repentance. That was a huge lesson. Because if you look at him and say, oh, no, you can't do that. What on earth made... you know, you could be in trouble with the law for that. You're going to lose all sorts of hope, and you have to pick up pieces before you start reconstructing lives. If this lady had said to the chap, you've got cancer, did you know statistically you've got a 1 in 3 chance of living? What extra work is she going to have to do in order to try and get that back on track and get them to understand what's going on? Okay, so you instill hope by saying, it's okay. I might not have experienced that level of trauma in my life before. I might not have gone through exactly what you've gone through, but what I can tell you is that God knows and He's not surprised. Instilling hope means that you understand that no temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. And so when we grow in the Lord, we understand more about what He wants of us, because we understand He knows that we are dust. He knows that we are creatures. He knows that we are sinful by nature. And God doesn't set the goal here and say, sorry, you can never get there. He says, I'm going to walk with you every step of the way. I'll help you through it. I'll encourage you. I'll strengthen you. I'll be there so that you know that you're never alone. I think that's the biggest encouragement that we can be to anybody. So often we say, well, if you don't want to do what I say, then you can bear the consequences of that yourself, and we'll walk away. Good counselor is there. A number of times I've said, here's my cell phone number. Any time of the day or night, I'll be there. I got phoned by a guy who couldn't sleep, and there were all sorts of other different issues happening in his life. And I sat explaining Romans 8 to him from 20 past 11 to 20 to 3 in the morning. He needed to know there was somebody there who would listen. And I would far rather he comes and chats to a godly person, not that I'm the most godly person, than go to somebody else who's going to give him godless advice. I'm prepared to put my hand out there and say, okay, I'm there to reach out for you any time of the day or night. You need to